Good morning. Each Sunday morning in August, we shall be looking at how God interacted. Excuse me. Something I'm going on behind me. Just a minute. I thought we'd done all this. No, he's not. Yeah. Thank you, Robin. Each Sunday morning in August, we're looking at how God interacted with his people during their time in the wilderness after he had delivered them from Egypt. My subject is the high priest. I have many Bible references, so don't please try to follow them. You may want to, you may be able to. But if you'd like to turn to Exodus 28, that would be a good starting point. When I thought of the high priest, it reminded me that I had attended a high Anglican church as a boy, and we had a priest. Has anyone else been in that situation, in a church with a priest? Just a few. In fact, we had several while I was there, both as a choir boy and an altar boy, carrying candles and swinging incense. I had great fun. The priest wore special clothes. There were some lovely people in the church who looked out for each other. A good sense of community generally around that time, a long time ago now. The priest was important. People looked up to him. We also knelt by him to tell him privately about the things we had done wrong. And he told us if we were truly sorry, God would forgive us. We went to confession quite regularly, and he pronounced absolution for us each time we went. This happened in a small section of the church, in a private place behind some wooden screens, so no one could see you while he was in there. And a wooden partition between the individual and the priest meant we couldn't see each other clearly in the dim light. He sat down on one side and the person knelt on the other. Of course, we recognized each other's voices. And sometimes, as a small lad, I found it really hard to think of something new to confess. It became familiar. And to some extent, the ritual and the tradition got in the way. And as I read about the appointment of the high priest in the book of Leviticus and Exodus, about the preparation for his appointment and the event that happened in the few years before, I realized how easy it is to become so familiar with them that we can easily lose sight of God in it all. We know, don't we, that in the Bible, God reveals himself, his character, his nature, and the things he holds dear. We know Exodus 20 contains the Ten Commandments, but if you read the following two or three chapters, 21 to 23, God speaks there about the treatment of servants, about the impact and what to do in respect of personal injuries. He talks about the protection of property. He talks about social responsibility. He talks about laws of justice and mercy. He talks about the Sabbath laws, a Sabbath rest, and the annual celebrations of God's saving grace for his people. Over the years, theologians and people have come to realize that God knows everything. He is all-powerful, and he is always there, and has they have described him as omnipotent, having complete or unlimited power, omniscient, having complete or unlimited knowledge, is aware and understands and perceives all things. He knows everything. And he is all-powerful. He's omnipresent. He's always present everywhere, continuously and at the same time present throughout the whole of creation. So he's present at all time and everywhere. And this is the God that led the people of Israel out of Egypt. And we see these characteristics of God encapsulated in many places in the Old Testament and in the New Testament. But we're thinking about the appointment of the high priest, the first high priest. And I thought there were a few instances in the Old Testament, in Exodus, that really took my breath away. The first one was that I noted is in Exodus 13, chapter 13, verse 20. After leaving Egypt, the people camped on the edge of the desert. And by day, the Lord went ahead of them in a pillar of cloud to guide them on their way. And by night, in a pillar of fire to give them light so they could travel by night. Neither the pillar of cloud by day nor the pillar of fire by night left its place in front of the people. I haven't got any PowerPoint this morning, so you may have to use your imagination. But can you imagine that? In an unknown land, following a pillar of cloud in front of the column of several million people now, coming out of a land. You follow this pillar of cloud, and it stays there every day. And then at night you have the pillar of light, the pillar of fire. Then, when they found themselves between the devil and the deep blue sea, or rather Pharaoh's army and the Red Sea, the angel of the Lord, who'd been travelling in front of the Israel's army, withdrew and went behind them. The pillar of cloud also moved from in front and stood behind them. So it moved at God's command. And it came between the armies of Egypt and the army of Israel. Throughout the night, this is what really took my breath away. Throughout the night, the cloud brought darkness to one side and light to the other. So neither went near the other all night long. Exodus 14, verses 19 to 20. So these two sat-nav facilities that God provided for his people interacted with the situation they found themselves in. And the pillar of cloud and the pillar of fire meant that they were separated. They couldn't see each other. And then in the next few verses, we read of the crossing of the Red Sea and how Pharaoh's army followed and were drowned. That is amazing, isn't it? It is absolutely amazing. If it wasn't in the Bible, it would be incredible. The song of Moses and his sister Miriam captures something of the wonder of it all in Exodus 15. In verse 3, it says, "The Lord is a warrior. The Lord is his name." In verse 6, "Your right hand, O Lord, was majestic in power and shattered the enemy." In verse 6, "By the blast of your nostrils, the waters piled up. The surging waters stood firm like a wall." They piled up. Imagine standing on one bank of the River Thames thinking, "I want to get to the other side, and there's no bridge, and the waters just pile up." They stood up like a wall, like that one or that one. How high, I don't know. But the waters stood up like a wall, and they went across on the dry land. Remarkable what God is able to do. And you'd think the people would be grateful. But it didn't take long before they started grumbling and they began to wish they were back in Egypt where there was food and water. But God is patient and merciful towards them. He had rescued them because he wanted them to be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. That's what we read in Exodus 19, verse 6. He wanted the people to represent him, to declare his glory and the honor of his name amongst themselves and to the surrounding people. But they had soon forgotten that God had performed these amazing miracles. Quite mind-boggling things. And they wanted to be back in Egypt. So I think the appointment of a high priest to continue the process of God's revelation of himself is a very significant act of grace. God didn't turn his back on his people because they had turned their back on him. He appointed a high priest. So who was this high priest? Who was this first high priest? Well, it was Aaron, Moses' elder brother. Their family record is in Exodus 16. They were descendants of Levi. Levi was one of the 12 sons of Jacob, who was one of the sons of Isaac, who was the son of Abraham. So Aaron had a great pedigree in the line of God's covenant promise with Abraham. Moses and Aaron often appear together in the pages of Exodus, and information about Aaron and Moses is interwoven together. But Aaron wasn't perfect, and neither was Moses. So where did Aaron come from? Well, he was living in Egypt, no doubt doing his best to survive under the harsh conditions of slavery. He would have known, I'm sure, that Moses had killed an Egyptian overseer and left the country. So would have been very surprised when God told him, in Exodus chapter 4, go into the desert to meet Moses. This man who killed an Egyptian was in the desert somewhere. Aaron would find him in the desert. God said, go and meet him in the desert. And he went. And I suspect that was a secret meeting, somehow arranged. They wouldn't have arranged it, but it would have been a meeting in secret, I'm sure. Because we know that to escape retribution after killing the Egyptian, Moses had fled to Midian. There God appears to him in the burning bush, which is again is a familiar story. But isn't that amazing? Another amazing act of God. This bush that appeared to be on fire, but actually didn't burn through or didn't burn out. And he tells him to go back. He tells him to go back to Egypt to tell Pharaoh he must let God's people go. We know Moses is reluctant and tries various excuses to avoid what God is doing. But in Exodus 4:13, he comes straight out with it and he says, oh Lord, please send somebody else. Please send somebody else. I don't want to do it. I'm not adequate. I don't have enough, whatever. Please send somebody else. Then in verse 14 of Exodus 4, we read this. Then the Lord's anger burned against Moses and he said, what about your brother Aaron, the Levite? I know he can speak well. He is already on his way to meet you. Put yourself in Moses' position before the Lord. Tell to go back and rescue the people. Tell Pharaoh to let his people go. And the Lord says to him, your brother's already on his way to meet you. He's told Aaron, go and meet Moses in the desert. It goes on. Aaron's heart will be glad when he sees you. You will speak to him and put words in his mouth. And I will let both of you speak and will teach you what to do. Moses goes back to Egypt and must have been taken aback, I'm sure, when he meets up with Aaron in the desert. So we see God at work in the background of these two brothers. He brings together for his purposes. Moses was reluctant to obey but did so. And Aaron began a journey which would lead him to a place of high office. Just think for a minute about the people of Israel. While in captivity in Egypt, it had been 400 years since Joseph and his family had gone there, and gradually they'd been taken over as slaves. Moses and Aaron's generation would have no doubt listened to many stories of their ancestors, but as slaves, the people would have lost a sense of dignity, a sense of identity. They would have lost their rights. They would have lost their choices. They would have lost their free will. They would have lost their independence. And perhaps for some, they would have even lost the will to live. They would have been downtrodden, under the thumb, living in servitude, dominated by their slave masters, oppressed, just existing, getting from one day to the next. And on top of that, all the time, their women were no doubt giving birth, children and adults were getting ill, people were dying of old age and disease and injury. But God has a plan. He heard their cry, and he is for them as he is for all who call out to him. So God uses these two men to rescue his people, to reach beyond their grasp, to stand up to their captors with great bravery and with great faith. It gives them ability beyond their natural talents and gifts, taking them on a journey of a lifetime across land and sea. Well, where the sea usually was, it was dry when they crossed it, didn't it? But that's another amazing aspect of the story. They lead the people out of Egypt, loaded down with jewelry and fabrics, and stand in awe as God parts the Red Sea and his people walk across on dry land. Pursuing army of Pharaoh are lost as the waters close over them. So that's a bit about Aaron, about who he was. And how was he appointed? In Exodus 28, chapter 1, we read that he was chosen by God. God tells Moses, have Aaron brought to him so that he and his sons Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar may serve me as priests. Make sacred garments for them, for your brother Aaron, to give him what? Dignity and honor. Not just dignity as a man, but dignity before the Lord. God, in a sense, wants to restore to Aaron and through Aaron what has been lost in captivity in Egypt. At this time, God also gave instructions for the construction of the tabernacle, and that's one of the topics that we'll be looking at later in this month of August. After about a year from the time when the instructions were given, all was ready. And we read in Leviticus 8 about Aaron and his sons being ordained. And that took place with much ritual. Firstly, they were washed with water and dressed in the clothes God had designed for them and given instructions about to Moses. They were anointed with oil, and sacrificial offerings were made to God as he had commanded earlier. Amongst the items of clothing they had was a breast piece. It was square. This is Exodus 28:9-30. It was made of gold and of blue, purple and scarlet yarn and of finely twisted linen. Very precise, isn't it? We had one of our granddaughters, or two of our granddaughters, staying with us this last week, and one of them was quite keen to sew. So it was lovely to hear Margaret helping her to work out the different stitches. But this breast piece that was made for Aaron was very intricate. It was square. It had four rows of precious stones, three per row. So there were 12 in all. And on each one, one for each of the 12 tribes of Jacob. So that when Aaron entered the holy place, he would bear the names of the sons of Israel over his heart on the breastpiece of decision as a continuing memorial before the Lord. Now, there were two items mentioned. Urim and Cummin used to make decisions before the Lord. And as I understand it, no one really knows how they were used. But they were part of God's instruction. He also had an ephod, which went underneath the breastplate. That was also made of gold and of blue and purple yarn and purple and scarlet yarn and a finely twisted linen. It had two stones on the shoulders, each one bearing the six names of the sons of Jacob. He had a robe with bells on the hem, perhaps to ensure that when he went into the God's presence, he didn't go unannounced. People knew that he was going in. He had a woven tunic and a turban. And on the turban was a gold plate. And on the turban were inscribed the words, "Holy to the Lord." So there he was, dressed in this very fine regalia ordained by God. And he presented offerings to God. The most important was the Day of Atonement, when he passed through the curtain separating the holy place in the tabernacle from the Holy of Holies. And he went to present a blood offering to God for the forgiveness of the sins of the people. It would be wrong to think that Aaron, the first high priest, got it all right, because he didn't. In between instructions for the priestly clothes he would wear and his consecration, Aaron listened to the voice of the people rather than God. God communicated with Moses on the mountain, and whenever Moses went up and took people with him, there were boundaries about how far they could go. And when there was some time him coming down, the people said to Aaron, "Come on, make us gods who will go before us. For this fellow Moses who brought us up out of Egypt, we don't know what's happened to him." So Aaron made a golden calf out of the women's jewelry. And when Moses came down and challenged him, he said, "Well, it just popped out of the fire." A very feeble excuse. You'd have thought he'd done better than that, wouldn't you? But I take from this encouragement that no matter what we have done, God can use us and will use us. He has plans for us. "I know the plans I have for you," declares the Lord in Jeremiah 29. "Plans to prosper you and not to harm you." I find that a real encouragement that we can take from the life of Aaron. It's also important for us to consider the holiness of God. If you look at Exodus 19, verses 16 to 19, read there. "On the morning of the third day, there was thunder and lightning with a black cloud over the mountain and a very loud trumpet blast. Everyone in the camp trembled. Then Moses led the people out of the camp to meet with God, and they stood at the foot of the mountain. Mount Sinai was covered with smoke because the Lord descended on it in fire. The smoke billowed up from it like smoke from a furnace. The whole mountain trembled violently, and the sound of the trumpet grew louder and louder. Then Moses spoke, and the voice of God answered him." And if you go over to Leviticus chapter 10, you read there that this omnipotent, omnipresent, all-powerful, all-knowing God reveals this. "Aaron's sons, Nadab and Abihu, took their censers and they put fire in them and added incense, and they offered unauthorized fire before the Lord, contrary to his command. So fire came out from the presence of the Lord and consumed them, and they died before the Lord." You see, we can't go into God's presence on our own. God is holy. That is why the high priest was appointed to represent us before God, to represent the people before God. We only can get to God, this almighty holy God, on his terms. We cannot go on our own terms. And this appointment of the high priest certainly has brought that out for me. We go on God's terms, not on our own. But of course, Aaron was merely a signpost, wasn't he, to the high priest that was to come, which Stuart has referred to earlier. So who was Aaron? He was a man with human descendants. He had a family. He was Moses' eldest brother. Who was Jesus? The Son of God, fully human, fully divine. Where did Aaron come from? Well, we know his background in Egypt. Where did Jesus come from? He was heaven, from heaven. God in human form, come down for us. Born of a virgin. How was Aaron appointed? By man, on God's instructions. How was Jesus appointed? By God. No man was involved. He came down. What did Aaron do? He presented offerings. As directed by God, Jesus laid down his life for us. A lamb without spot or blemish, as we've sung about this morning, and as we remembered this morning at communion. A man without sin, no sin. When did Aaron carry out his first priestly duties? Well, in that story in Exodus, at a particular time appointed by God. When did Jesus do it? In a sense, in the same way, at a time appointed by God when he hung on the cross of Calvary. But we read in Ephesians that he was the lamb slain before the foundation of the world. So it was always part of God's plan that Jesus should die for us. What went wrong? Well, since Aaron's appointment, the priestly office, the men as priests, gained power and control. They may have lost sight of God and become more concerned about the tradition and the ritual. They may have had good intentions, but they had forgotten mercy. And remember in Mark 15, chapter 1, Mark 15, verse 1, very early in the morning, the chief priests with the elders, the teachers of the law, and the whole Sanhedrin reached a decision. This was after Jesus' arrest. The people had been taken, and he'd been taken to these men. They bound Jesus and they led him away and turned him over to Pilate. So the very office that God had ordained to represent man to him turned their back on God and offered Jesus over to Pilate. So that's what went wrong, in the sense that they lost sight of God and were taken over by their tradition and their ritual. And we know that as far as Jesus is concerned, nothing went wrong at all, because he was raised from the dead. Again, another amazing fact which we can take so easily for granted. But he was raised from the dead. So the high priest in Exodus fulfilled a purpose, and he points us to Jesus.